The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 13th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus said, in those days after that suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And the stars will be falling from heaven and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Then the Son of Man will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gate. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like someone going on a journey, who leaving home and putting the slaves in charge of their own work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the Lord of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or else coming suddenly, the Lord may find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Good morning, everyone. It's a wonderful Sunday, beautiful Sunday, sun shining outside. I want to begin this morning by a short exercise. But before that, let me just tell you a little story. When I was in my high school, one of my teachers said to me, rather to the rest of the class, study or read as if every day there is an exam. So the teacher was saying every day it's an exam day. So when you study, you must make sure you prepare as if you're going to write an exam tomorrow or that day. But before we begin to unpack this text this morning, let me ask each one of you to use the chat box. I want to ask this question and put the answer on the chat box. I asked Jonathan if he can to collect all the answers and he will put on the slide and will display those answers and I'll read them at the end. No, don't worry, you will not put your name. We just read the answer, okay? Don't worry about that. So the question is that I want to ask to you, and I'll give you 2 minutes, and if possible, I'll ask our musicians, Imogen Bruce and Kirsten, to just play whilst you are putting your answers on the chat box. So about a minute or two to put your answers. The question is, what would you do if the world would end tomorrow? What would you do? Just put your answer, one word, two words, whatever. Put the answer on the chat box. Our tech vendor will collect the answers and then we'll display them at the end. I'll ask that question again at the end. And then we will just read, not all, but maybe a few of those answers. Please, what would you do if the world were to end tomorrow? Don't share the answers. I know some couples might discuss their answers. This is an individual question. Okay? Thank you very much. Thank you so much for doing that. I have not read anything yet. I will just read at the end. Thank you so much. The year 2020 has been a dark year. So many stories can be told about this year. In the midst of the coronavirus crisis, some have asked if it is a sign that the end of time is near. Is it an indicator that Jesus is coming soon? Or is it related to the plagues referenced in the book of Revelations? And many of you remember the myths in the year 2000, where some sections of the religious people predicted the end of the world. This morning, these events of this year also draw attention to the profound contradiction between God's promises and the brutal realities of life on this earth. The painful irony is that the stronger our faith in God of Israel, the more deeply we feel this contradiction. But Advent invites us to linger on those matters, not only on the expectation of Christ's second advent, but also on the disappointing fact that it hasn't happened yet. Mark 13 launches us into an apocalyptic theophany. And in most cases, the apocalyptic theophanies contains three things. Number one, God's coming or God's arrival. Number two, the cosmic disturbances like earthquake, volcanoes, and the like. Number three, the eschatology, judgment and salvation. Whatever the strange apocalyptic language Mark means, it must be understood as a direct address of the temple, of the relation to the reality of the temple's destruction around 70 Common Era. The destruction of the temple represents a catastrophe of divine presence and continuity with the past. So the temple is a center of the religious life, but also political and economic life too. So when we read the apocalyptic texts, generally it is helpful to think of all of them as crisis literature. So the text here this morning presents this event as one that precipitates the events of the end of times, the sufferings that will befall Israel on the brink of the day of the Lord, toward which the prophets has pointed. But you also need to remember at this time, when this text was written, the Jewish people have been displaced all over in diaspora, all over in the world, because of economic and oppression. And Jesus implied that the injustice to the Jews living in foreign soil would be corrected during his lifetime. So these signs will serve as a sort of emergency alert system, letting all the world know that they would better run and hide or lift their faces to the sky to greet the Son of Man. I know these days we have got different ways of getting the emergency alerts. It could be on our phone devices through the apps. Sometimes we look at the radar, the weather, the radar on the weather to see what it looks like. Is there a volcano? Is there a tornado? Is there earthquake? Is there cyclone? And other things, we get that from our television sets. Sometimes there are other ways, the media that can help us, Facebook, Twitter and the like, to tell us about these emergencies. So many ways that we get these emergency alerts. But here we are told of the signs that will happen during that time. But there is nothing wrong with Jesus' emergency alert system. The problem comes when we respond to it in inappropriate ways. So, in this world where we have thieves, the world with wars and dictators, the world with economic hardships, where the powers and the principalities cannot be trusted, Jesus proclaims that with his coming, this suffering will come to an end. So when Jesus comes, the stars, which represents the powers and the rulers of the world of that time, they will fall. He will cast down the mighty from their thrones. And the real ruler of the world will retain, not with more destruction, but with hope and peace. The power dynamics are changing, and indeed, they've already changed. So we see this morning the symbolism here suggests that the face of God's desires coming to full fruition, every other power symbolized by the sun, the moon, or the stars receives notice, but it sees its light going out. So no aspect of the human existence goes untransformed when God enters in for good. But here's the thing, those only who wait for the end tend to withdraw rather than take up their crosses and follow Jesus. You know, sometimes in 2000, I will tell you again, an example of what happened back in our country in Zimbabwe. Year 2000, a lot of people, of course, one good thing about the year 2000 is some couples, they confessed to each other. You know, wives, they've been confessing to their husbands, you know, please, I did this, maybe we can die 2000. I want God to receive me in heaven. Oh, of course, that was good, right? But there are so many myths that happened. People were tying themselves with the wreaths so that you can be saved. All kinds of things has been happening during that time to save their lives. But this morning, it's so wonderful for us to have this text in our midst to help us to use every day as if Christ will return tomorrow or today at this very hour. Always ready, always be alert. Mark, Jesus puts a pox on those who try to calculate dates. Of course, this is This is typical of the Western life. We calculate things, we plan, we do all these things. We use chronos. We always want to use that to calculate. That is very good. But the issue is not to fix our eyes on calculating the time. That is not the issue. The issue is about standing firm right to the end, rather than the one who calculates it will be saved. Endure the time. Keep on working. But now, here's the question. What would you do if the world were to end tomorrow? Jesus, at this point in the story, seems to be warning his disciples about the end of time. And it's not a pretty picture at all. It's doom, it's gloomy, falling stars, shaking heavens, and all the rest. And the speculation about the end of the world seems rampant, even today. And that's part of the problem too. But one of the promises of the scripture is that Christ will return. Indeed, he will return. That God will bring the creation God fashioned to a good end, and that everything will tend to think of as a permanent is more fragile or more vulnerable than we typically like to imagine. Our bodies are fragile. This world we live in is fragile, but Christ will return, and surely he will return. So what do we need to do? That's another question that I want to pose to you, my siblings, this morning. You know, waiting and watching with the agents Jesus describes today is not something I do very well. I'm not very good about that personally. I get busy with other things most of the time. But here, the outcome is not just about waiting for another physical appearance of Jesus in the future, but it is about patiently and watchfully training our attention on where Christ might be manifested today. And this is very important for us as a Christian community today. What is it that you can do now? Are you going to fight for the LGBTQ rights? Are you going to advocate for the end of racism? This is the period of the 16 days of gender activism. Are you going to participate in those activities? What is it that you need to do? And last week, thanks to our preacher, Pastor Kathleen, last week, I was hungry and you gave no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. I was naked and you did not give me clothing. I was sick and in prison and you did not visit me. This is what we should be doing now. Not any other time. So when we wait for the Christ's return, we should be doing something. So in other words, waiting and watching for Jesus in our midst is not about passivity, is not about inactivity. It's about doing something while we wait for his return. His words in this passage commend readiness and alertness, not patient inactivity. And here it shows a sign of expectance. And expectance here means looking alertly for the opportunities to come alongside Christ and embody Christ's purposes in the present as well as in the future. So we must live in the imminent expectation of the Messiah's arrival. And this sense of the anticipation is designed to drive a sense of urgency rather than living in apathy. So Christians should be motivated by the question, how much time do we have left? And I would answer that question, no time, no time at all, because it can happen now. So no time is left. Let's start working now. So here's something I want to explain in this story. There's a wonderful image in this story. I want you to pay attention at this point. In Matthew and Luke, we are told that if the homeowner of the house had known what the time of the night the thief was coming, he would keep watch. So in other words, Mark and Luke, they talk about the thief. But our text in Mark here talks about the master. And this is a very big difference. It talks about the master. The master, after all, is in control of his house. He does not come to rob or to destroy. By the way, the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, has come to give life in abundance, not to destroy, not to kill, but life in abundance. He returns home to rest. This is the master. To reunite with the friends and servants he left in his work. To reap the profits they have earned while he was away. To check on the state and upkeep of his estate. The gatekeeper might be embarrassed if his master arrives while he is asleep, because he may even be rebuked by the returning master for such a negligence. But the master is not a thief. He doesn't bring wrath or destruction. He hasn't come with the purpose to judge or to condemn. He returned home. He returned home expecting to celebrate with his homecoming with his household. So when the master is coming, it's the time for us to celebrate. And this is very important. It's the time to celebrate. So this Advent is the time for us to prepare for this wonderful celebration where Christ will come in his glory. The time to celebrate. So Jesus comes to us in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or you can add even now. But the apocalyptic sign of the cross is present in the Advent season. This is really interesting in this story. We see right here, herein lies a connection of the coming of the Messiah, born in Bethlehem, and the outpouring of the Son of Man, Jesus' death and resurrection. So the events of Jesus' birth and death are inseparable. That's why we read this story during the Advent. We cannot have one without the other. So this story is of God's salvation in Jesus Christ. Once asked what he would do if he believed the world would end tomorrow, Martin Luther is said to have responded, "I would plant a tree today." We also, confident of God's love and sure of God's promises about the future, can also invest in the present, in the everyday, in the ordinary, in the people and causes around us. For we have God's promises in the cross and resurrection of Christ, that in time God will indeed draw all people of God's creation, not just to an end, but to a good end. And now, the last exercise. Jonathan? Now let me ask that question as Jonathan is preparing to put the answers on our screen. What would you do if the world were to end tomorrow? Oh my, my, this is great. Meet friends for coffee. Oh, that's wonderful. Go see and hug my family. Oh, great. Go hiking, visiting family. Hug as many people in my family as possible. Oh, someone I don't know. Give away all the money. Go to the beach with my children, husband, and dogs. Get a good night's sleep. Stop everything and go for a walk with my family. Hold my dog close. Be with family. Hug and play with kids. Pray and rejoice. Gather with people, especially those loved ones. Gather with family. Bake a bread. Hike. Go for a walk. Just let it come. Call all the people I want to say goodbye. Tell everyone how I love them. Thank God for the life. I'll reach to as many people as I can far and tell them I love them. Contact all those I love. Visit my family. Say I love you all to all my family. Laugh about previous worries. Communicate my love to my friend. Stay up all night. Go get all the animals off. Oh, sorry, I can't see this last one, sorry. Go get all the animals out of the shelters and feed them. Oh, wonderful, good people. This is great. You guys, you are just wonderful. Thank you so much. Thanks, Jonathan, for doing that. This is great. Thank you for helping me to end this sermon this morning. But let me just give you a few sentences as I wrap up. Guess what? You don't need to wait. You can do those things now. Love the ones you want to love. Finish the work you started. Be reconciled to those who need you. Be faithful to the people and tasks around you. Undertake some small and wonderful and great endeavor. Why not? For Christ has come. Christ is coming, and Christ will come again, all in the name of love. And we, God's beloved children, for whom Christ died and for whom Christ now lives, along with all God's blessed creation, are those for whom Christ is coming. Amen.